I'm Nevin Kleiman, and this is Good Food.
The runny, the tart, the overripened. Fruit can be fickle and downright tricky. Difficult, as poet, pie maker, and naturalist Kate Lebo characterizes some. Approached alphabetically, Lebo's essays in the Book of Difficult Fruit disseminate seeds of knowledge, reflection, and practicalities. Hi.
Hey, Evan. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. We're so thrilled to have you. It's such a fascinating book with it's so layered, which is my favorite kind of book of all. To sort of anchor us, could you begin by reading a bit from the book?
Sure. I will read from A Note on Difficult Fruit. In this book, fruit is not the smooth-skinned, bright-hued, waxed and edible ovary of the grocery store. Nor is it a symbol of goodness and kindness and productivity and the virtues of civilization. Here, fruit is difficult. Blackberries are invasive. Huckleberries can't be farmed. Medlars must rot in order to sweeten. Wheatberry dust is more explosive than gunpowder. Consider the apricot. To a small child, apricot kernels can be toxic if eaten. To the sick, the same kernels might be medicine. To the cook, they are a secret source of flavor. To the consumer who knows no better, the pit and kernel are garbage to throw out, which suits the fruit best of all.
So marvelous. Were fruits the prompt for memory, or did you realize how many memories had fruit in them?
Oh, gosh. I think that's a chicken and egg type question. Both. Yes. Neither. I know for me, fruit offered these sideways doors into topics that I had been ruminating on and, you know, not able to kind of come to any sort of organized conclusion for a long time. And so trying to approach those memories and those questions through fruit, which felt accessible and felt like a surprising way to get there, made that possible.
And the word difficult, by difficult, do you mean unusual?
Sure, but I also mean maybe hard to come by. I mean difficult to process into what humans would call food. I might mean something that's so local, it's incredibly easy for those who live close to its habitat, but incredibly difficult to, you know, get a hold of or even understand if you live anywhere else. Oh, and my favorite difficulty, the difficulty of a fruit that we are totally familiar with and the way that the market erases the difficulties of those fruits from us. So an apple, a peach, the ways that, you know, the grocery store just presents those to us, like they are always there and always will be there. But of course, we know it's a much trickier story than that.
Much trickier story. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about wheat, a plant that has obvious difficulties And many not so obvious. The piece that you read at the beginning from the book, you mentioned that wheat is more explosive than gunpowder. Let's start there.
Sure. And that's a fact that I learned when I was on tour for pie school. I did a demonstration at the Mill City Museum in Minneapolis. And there was a really incredible show there about the history of the mills along St. Anthony Falls in Minneapolis. And the story of a gigantic explosion that happened in 1878, because one spark from two unfed millstones hit air that was full of wheat dust and caused a conflagration that took out multiple buildings and killed many people. And I started, you know, I was there as a pie lady, right? I was there to teach people something sweet, have some fun with flour. And so to kind of confront the literal explosiveness of this material was pretty thrilling and surprising to me. And it led me to think about a relationship that I had gotten out of, that I had ended a couple of years previous, where one of the things that had become insurmountable in our relationship was that my partner was discovering he had celiac disease, and I loved to bake, and I was becoming very expressive in flour, in a medium that was making him sick. So those two stories started to become related in my mind. I thought, maybe I can understand my failure in this relationship and the failure of the way that I had hoped that kind of pie would be this nurturing, lovely thing, the way that it instead became this poison.
It's really fascinating how many of the stories that you tell sort of parse this line between the bright, happy side of fruit and the underlying toxicity of it, and also toxicity in relationships, because there is this thread of memoir that runs through the book. So let's dive into a couple fruits, if we can. Let's pick the maraschino cherry. The maraschino cherry for me has always had, it's just a total repository for memory, because the only time I really ever ate them in my life was when I had Shirley Temples, when my dad, when my parents were divorced, would take me out. And that was so much a part of me getting to see him again and be near him, was this offering of the Shirley Temple. Tell me a bit about your connection to the maraschino.
Sure. Oh, but that just made me wonder, have you read Thomas Lux's poem, Refrigerator, 1957?
No, I'm writing it down.
Yeah, I opened the book with a quote from him, and that's about a jar of maraschino cherries, and they are just throbbing and beautiful in this refrigerator. And about them, he says, you know, you do not eat that which, you know, rips your heart with joy.
Oh, God.
And my response was, of course you do.
Yes.
That's exactly what I want to do, is I want to eat that joyful thing. Oh, well, so for me, the maraschino cherry always makes me think of my aunt, Amy, who passed away in 1990 of breast cancer when she was in her early 30s. And it makes me think of her because I was, you know, 7 or 8 at the time that she passed away. And she had been sick for a while. And I, for some reason, thought that she had gotten this cancer from eating maraschino cherries. Some connection between processed foods and you know, something going bad in your body. I don't know how that was made, but it was made. And it was an assumption that my parents never corrected, because I just never said it out loud. It was one of those just things that, you know, kids imagine and keep to themselves. So that, you know, became an opportunity in this essay about maraschino cherries, you know, not just to look at the true history of maraschino cherries and truly if they, you know, are poisonous or affect your health in any way, but to get even deeper and get into the pit of the cherry and the kernel of the cherry, where both almond flavor and cyanide coexist. And I loved that coexistence, both the sweetness and this danger being inside, you know, a very, very familiar fruit.
And I, too, have made my own maraschino cherries with sour cherries and marasca, the liqueur from which this cherry originally got its name, and was blown away by the difference, right?
Right. I mean, and nothing could be easier than making those cherries. You just put cherries in liqueur.
That's it.
The hardest thing is finding the cherries.
Which makes the industrialization of it just so much more fascinating.
Right.
Let's talk about recipes for a minute. You have some really just such engaging thoughts about recipes. Can you read the first paragraph of a note on recipes, please?
Sure thing. Recipes are rituals that promise transformation. They blend the precision of an instruction manual with the faith of a spell, and, no matter when they were written, occur in the present.
That thought in and of itself is very profound, I think.
And it's in front of us all the time as cooks. I mean, good Lord, how long did it take from when I started teaching myself how to cook to when I took a close look at a recipe and realized, like, this is a really bossy document, and the voice is in the room with me, in the present, telling me what to do right now. And that is so different than most of the other reading and writing that I do. I loved thinking about that as an element that was just essential to what a recipe is.
Thank you so much, Kate.
You're so welcome. It is a pleasure to be here, Evan. Thanks for talking to me.
That's pie maker, poet, and cheese apprentice, Kate Lebo. Her book is The Book of Difficult Fruit, Arguments for the Tart, Tender, and Unruly with Recipes.
missed any of today's show, listen on kcrw.com/goodfood or on KCRW's mobile app. You can also subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. My thanks to the Good Food team, Jillian Ferguson, Laryl Garcia, Elena Shatkin, Desmond Taylor, Nick Lamponi, and Hope Brush. And special thanks to Laura Kondarajan and Gary Masiha. I'm Evan Kleiman. Enjoy this holiday weekend. Eat some fruit. Make a pie. I'll be back next week with an all-new episode of Good Food.